And we are going to continue the hour by talking about Congress. The 2022 election is in the books. Georgia is still yet to be determined, but we know Republicans will control the U.S. House and Democrats will control the Senate. What might that mean for Congress in the coming years? Sarah Truel is an associate professor of political science at UNC. Her research focuses, among other things, on Congress as an institution, and she joins us here now in the studio. Dr. Truel, thank you so much for being with us
today. Thank you for having me.
So, knowing what you know about Congress, you saw the election results. What have been your thoughts about the results and what it might mean for just Congress as an institution in the coming years?
Sure, it's a great question. It's certainly on everyone's mind right now and will be for the foreseeable future. The first thing that comes to mind is just how close this election was. And that was sort of surprising in many ways. I mean, as you all know, there was lots of talk about there being a red wave, Republicans doing well, Republicans perhaps taking over the Senate, certainly taking over the House, which they did, but they did not do with the great fanfare that was sort of expected going in. So if you're a Democrat, it was probably a good election night for the most part. Now, that being said, that slim majority is what's on my mind as a scholar of Congress. Mm-hmm. So what can Republicans do, only having 5 to 8 seats? And again, a lot of this is going to fluctuate over the course of the next 2 years as we see people either resign, people retire, people step down, illnesses, vacancies are very common in the House of Representatives. So when you're looking at such a small majority, can things get done? Coupled with that is the problem that the Republican caucus has currently, and the Democratic caucus, I should say, as well. But in the Republican conference in particular, it's very divided. Mm-hmm. So we spend a lot of time talking about polarization and talking about differences between Republicans and Democrats. But when we go into those parties, that's where I think things get really interesting. And within the Republican Party, there is a far right faction that is not going to want to compromise, not going to want to work with the majority leader, not want to get things done, not want to spend money. And how can Kevin McCarthy, with such a small majority, actually accomplish the party's goals?
I assume that affects the issues that are going to get brought up in the next 2 years, too, of which ones will and which ones won't.
Absolutely. So the slim majority is definitely going to affect agenda setting, right? What can come to the floor for a vote? And here we're going to see probably not a lot getting done. And that's been kind of a mantra of the Republican Party for the last several Congresses. And that makes a lot of sense with some of the conservative principles coming out of that party. We want less spending. We want to get fewer bills passed, et cetera. At the same time, there's some real legislation that does have to happen. And that must pass legislation, whether it's appropriation bills, whether it's funding the government, whether it's raising the debt limit, all of these things are going to come to fruition. And how can the Republican Party, with such a small majority, accomplish these tasks is going to be on the minds of any congressional scholar and should be on the minds of the general public as well.
So much talk in the last decade plus now about polarization leading to gridlock and an inability to pass bills, especially in the Senate where you got the filibuster. So if you don't have a 60 vote majority for one party and there's gridlock, you can't get anything passed. In the last 2 years, that seemed to be a little bit different. Congress passed stimulus, infrastructure. They just passed the same-sex marriage bill, the climate bill, gun reform. But in the next 2 years, it's going to be a divided couple of houses with the narrow majority. So how effective is Congress as an institution in general, like at getting things done and those must pass bills that you mentioned?
By most metrics, Congress is not super effective today.
Yeah.
And by comparison, if we go back to what scholars would call the textbook Congress era, which I'm not even sure honestly what that means anymore, but it really means going back to the 60s and 70s and sort of the standard operating procedure that many people learn about when they study the institutions of the United States, it looks very different today. Things are not passed sort of on time. Appropriation bills are not passed on time. We end up with a lot of omnibus legislation, which is where we just kind of throw everything, including the kitchen sink, in together. Instead of funding and passing a budget, we end up with continuing resolutions, or worse, shutting down the government for an extended period of time. These are all indicators that Congress itself as an institution is not functioning particularly well. As a scholar of Congress, what I look to frequently as one of the contributing factors of this is the rise of these factions within the parties themselves. So it's people on the far left, it's people on the far right that have a very different agenda, generally speaking, than the more moderates that are still in that institution. And that's what we see. We see the far left, we see the far right. The media portrays them as very active, which they are. but they can prevent often their caucus from getting things done. And this is going to be precisely the Republican Party's problem here going into the 118th Congress.
What fixes that? What pushes things the other way?
So my answer to what fixes this is often in the hands of the voter. We have a responsibility as voters, first of all, to turn out and vote, but also to think through really carefully who it is we're voting for and what their role in the institution, what their role in the party will be. And that's not to say you can't have someone that has more extreme views on the left or on the right, but at the same time, will they at the end of the day work together for the ultimate sacrifice of getting legislation passed and making the institution what it can be?
Speaking with Sarah Truel, UNC political scientist, about talking about Congress and jumping off of that, David Price just updated his book on Congress, and he talks about the difference between workhorses and show horses, right? Workhorses are the ones who actually get things done, and show horses are the ones who are all over the news but not actually accomplishing anything, which you're smiling and nodding because you totally know that. Based on the election, like who came out on top in the last midterm?
So I will say one of the silver linings in the 2022 election is for the entire institution that more of what political scientists call quality candidates. So mm-hmm. candidates that come into the institution with prior legislative experience, prior experience in elective office more generally, they won. They did pretty well. A lot of my research focuses on non-quality candidates, so people who lack prior experience in elective office. And the trend there has been that those types of candidates have been on the rise, both on the left and on the right. And the problem with electing people that don't have prior experience, not to say there aren't good candidates out there, but at the same time, the problem with electing them, generally speaking, is that they don't come in understanding how to put together an effective staff, right? How you hire on the Hill, what kind of policy expertise you need. They might not have policy expertise themselves. They don't understand how a bill becomes a law in the negotiating, compromising parts of the process that are so important. And so when we think a little bit about, you know, if workhorses or show horses had a better election year, I actually think the workhorses had a pretty good year. And so it'll be interesting to see is, are they able to get things done? And that takes us back to that small majority we see the Republican Party coming in with. They might have more workhorses, but they still have some pretty big show horses on the right that are going to make it really challenging for the party leadership to be effective.
In terms of inexperienced candidates kind of being on the rise in terms of winning elections, is that something that we have seen in the past at any time, or is this like a new thing?
This is pretty much a new thing.
Yeah.
So my research generally goes back to 1980 in tracking the rise of inexperienced candidates to Congress. And what we first saw was Republicans sending inexperienced candidates starting in about 2010 with the Tea Party movement, though I want to be clear that a lot of the Tea Party candidates themselves were quality candidates, were experienced candidates. And then Democrats kind of picking up on this a little bit later, more around 2018, but having extremely high rates of inexperienced candidates being effective around that time. Now, I also want to note another piece of silver lining, though, for inexperienced candidates is that they tend to diversify Congress as well. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the people who are coming in with a lack of experience legislatively are bringing to the table different kinds of qualities, different things that we think of as positive when considering representation.
Yeah, you've written about women representation, gay and lesbian, working class representation,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, all those things, right. And we're seeing as inexperienced candidates come in, they tend to check more of those boxes.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about how local elections are being nationalized. Like if you like Republicans on the national level, you're going to vote for Democrats or Republicans all the way down. Same thing for Democrats. Some of your research is kind of gone the other way. You've talked about how state level politics and government influence what's going on in Congress. What should we know about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is the case that what's happening in states can influence Congress. And I think we're seeing more people starting to pay attention to what's going on in states for all the right reasons, right? States are one of the places that you really actually do have some power and you do have some control, especially as a voter. Your vote's simply going to matter more. And that's true all the way down to your local school board election. So that being said, we can learn a lot by turning into our state legislatures, thinking about what they're working on, thinking about how that's going to affect decisions that are made in Congress. Now, you don't always see that at the ballot box, as you noted, right? We still see most people casting straight ticket ballots, even though that's not a formal bubble on the ballot itself. People are not making choices that are independent. But all that is to say, elections are becoming much more local as people tune in to their own districts, as they think about what their district needs. That's a positive part. Now, the reason for that is often the gerrymandering and the things that we've seen happen in districts, which make districts themselves look much less like the nation as a whole, mm-hmm. much less like a state as a whole in some cases, and are more, you know, centered on either conservative policies or progressive policies.
Speaking with Sarah Trulin, we've got to start wrapping up this conversation, but as we do, you are an expert on Congress. You're also a resident of this country who wants to see Congress succeed. What makes you optimistic, and what are you concerned about in the next couple of years?
So I'm concerned about Congress as an institution being respected and working across the aisle. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, I think Congress itself really needs to find ways to be bipartisan. And I say that a little bit lightly because at the same time, there's tons of bipartisan legislation that passes all the time. It's just not the hot ticket items that we so frequently are expecting Congress to be working on. So I would like Congress to come up with ways that there can be more negotiation, more compromise. And I think this will be a big test here in the 118th Congress, as again, we see this slim majority. Republicans are going to need moderate Democrats. They're going to need to work with Democrats if they're going to accomplish things as far as the party is concerned. Now, what does that do to the far right? How angry does the House Freedom Caucus get in response to that? Does Kevin McCarthy even have the votes to be Speaker? We'll see. But at the same time, those are the kinds of things that I really hope we can focus on. I think as a voter for me, thinking through very carefully who it is that I want to vote for in election, thinking again about those same things we already talked about, finding someone who's moderate, someone who's willing to work with the party, even if they have more progressive views or more conservative views, who's going to come in and say, it's not about me, it's about the institution.
Sarah Trulin is an associate professor of political science at UNC. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. It was great.